This is CliffCentral.com.
Her name is Jess Glynn. The song's called I'll Be There. Number one in the UK at the moment.
I'll be there for you.
Nice voice.
Never be alone. I'll be there for you.
Beautiful.
Very cool.
All right, so there we go. A little bit of fresh music for you on a fresh Monday morning. Chilly.
Let's use the word fresh to make ourselves feel better.
Well, what I mean is freezing cold.
Yes.
All right, pick a hand. Oh, wait, I've got to put something in the one hand. Otherwise, because we've got so much to talk about this
morning.
Doesn't
exactly work then.
Play a game. All right, I've got this this Apple iPhone to AUX connector in my one hand.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to choose a hand. Right. And Sia's going to choose a story. All right, Sia, choose a hand. If you choose the one with the connector in it, I'm going to go with a certain discussion this morning. If you choose the other one, we'll go with the opposite.
How we've reached this point,
so
I
exciting.
Do not know.
This is how we do news, by the way. This is how all the good newsrooms work.
Yes, actually.
All right, you've pulled the AUX cable, which means we got to talk about Eskom.
Yo, where do we begin?
Well, I'll tell you how I'm involved, because it caused all kinds of controversy again. All I was doing was sitting on William Nickel like about a million other people stuck on Friday afternoon, which, as you know, it's a hard road to get down anyway. And on a Friday, people are tired, or they're grumpy, or they're on their way home, or they're in a good mood because it's Friday, and that traffic will suddenly kill your good mood.
Yeah, it has been known to rip souls out.
So I was going in the opposite direction to all the traffic. It was carnage on the other side. Carnage. I saw people like smashing into their steering wheels with their heads because they were so annoyed, because they couldn't move and they must have been stuck for hours. And if you were one of those people, I'm really sorry. But I was driving down the road and looking at all of this, and I couldn't understand why all the traffic lights were out. I thought, well, you know, the city of Joburg's so useless that it could be because when it rains, everything gets wet and the traffic lights go out. But it hadn't rained. And then I thought, well, maybe one of the sets of lights is out. But every new intersection I went past, there was another set of lights out. And then I suddenly clicked. Ah, it's Eskom. It's load shedding.
Yep.
That's what was going on. And while Pravin Gordhan and Eskom's workers and the unions and management are all sitting in a probably air-conditioned room somewhere getting cookies and tea and discussing whether or not they're going to pay themselves more of your money, you're sitting in traffic, trying to earn a living, trying to enjoy your Friday, the one day that you've earned. I just thought, you know what? This is wrong. This is wrong on so many levels. So when I got to my destination, I tweeted that I, like many people, I suppose, I'm not a big fan of parastatals or of Eskom or what they're doing. And I don't know whether this was out of line or not, and maybe it was, but I don't care. I said, I should really just stay off of this. I actually deleted Twitter off my phone, but this one I felt I needed to get on there. So eventually I said, I don't know about you, but I can't wait for everyone at Eskom to be fired and replaced by robots. Hashtag dumbasses, hashtag fuck you. And then the responses I got from that are like 1,403 likes, but there were 318 retweets and 135 comments that came out of nowhere. And most of those comments were from people who agreed, but it irritated me that there were people who didn't agree. And I'll tell you what kind of people didn't agree and why they state in their own words they disagreed.
Okay.
A lot of people said to me, how can you say that you'd like Eskom workers to be fired and replaced by robots? How are they going to feed their families? As if Eskom exists to feed people's families. As if it's a feeding scheme. As if Eskom and the other parastatals and so many other jobs in this country are there because people need jobs. Do you understand the fundamentals of economy? Do you understand that businesses don't exist to employ you and your family? Do you understand that businesses exist to make a profit? Especially in the case of a state-owned enterprise where there have never been profits, as far as I can tell, and certainly not in the last 20 years, has this place been run properly. In fact, what they've done is incur costs, huge costs, that have almost ruined the South African economy and thereby ruined the lives of those very people that you're talking about in Eskom. So let's start at the very beginning. Eskom are a power supplying utility. They are owned wholly by government. Government is responsible for keeping Eskom afloat, and they have done so to the tune of billions, if not tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions by the time the final accounting is done. So this is not an enterprise which seems to be making any progress. It's been mismanaged into the ground. Many people have been hired that didn't need to be hired. It's become like a sheltered employment venue for a lot of useless people in the economy. And of course, there are good people at Eskom. But who cares? There are good people in all kinds of... There are probably good people in scrap metal somewhere in South Africa who don't deserve to be tarred with the same brush as other scrap metal people. There are probably good people in rhino poaching. You don't know. It might be very nice. There might be a family or two that are supported by rhino poaching. That doesn't mean we should encourage it, does it? And when you're stealing on the level of Eskom, which is almost, I think it's head and shoulders above all the other state-owned enterprises when it comes to how much money they've stolen. I don't care about the families that they're helping to support. Those families should be embarrassed to be working for a state-owned utility that is pissing away money like it is. There are loads and loads of people that were employed unnecessarily by Eskom. That's what's been admitted by management. Now, management, we know, were a disaster. Brian Molefe was in there. There were a huge coterie of useless people. Useless people who were put in there by politicians. Nobody has gone to jail yet, and they all should. So let's start there, shall we? Before we talk about the families who are going to go without food because Eskom closes down. Because it eventually has to be supplanted by something that works. We can't keep paying for Eskom. Why do you think I would care about a family that doesn't get food on their table because they work at Eskom? Have some self-respect and go and work for a company that actually turns a profit. Then you can take home a salary without having to feel bad. How about that? I don't feel anything for those people. And yes, I would like to reiterate, I would be thrilled if they'd be replaced by robots, which they eventually will be. Maybe not in my lifetime, but soon. Now, is that an unreasonable thing to say when everybody's stuck in traffic and William Nicol, the hardworking people who are actually putting money into the coffers of government?
No, but for so many people, they can't ever handle truth.
Some woman...
They just can't handle the truth of these things.
Some woman says to me on Twitter, I can't believe you would say that. I have two sisters who work for Eskom, and they have families. So first of all, she works for a CETA. I went and looked at her Twitter profile. She works for a CETA, which is another government institution. Three sisters work for government, and she's worried about me. You three should resign in utter embarrassment for working for three divisions of government and subdivisions of the bureaucracy that are absolutely not economically capable of sustaining themselves. Don't make that my problem. I'm sorry, honey, but you and your two sisters, if you can't find employment in the private sector, you probably don't deserve the jobs you have. So again, be replaced by robots.
Yeah, but that you bring up a good point there. Economically viable. When is this going to ever go into the equation setup of the mindset towards these things? They have to be economically viable. They're not here to make people eat, as you say.
Let's just think about Eskom. Again, we've brought this up so many times. Eskom is probably a singular case in the history of economics. It is a company that produces electricity, asks you to use less of its product so that it can charge you more, still not turn a profit, be bailed out by government, and increasingly and every single time over history, be replaced by management which is less competent than the management which came before. Then finally, you get a CEO who's got the balls to say, no increases, because the average salary at Eskom is something like 750,000 rand a month. The average
780.
Sorry. So that means that people who work at Eskom are grossly overpaid. I mean, remember, an average, you know what an average is. Take everybody and you divide by the number of people. That's what the average salary works. Now, that means the tea lady to the CEO. 750,000 rand a year? Are you kidding me? How many people do you think earn that in the private sector? Average salary-wise. Very, very few. So it's not even in keeping with what's going on in the country. That's why it costs us so much to run Eskom.
Well, there's a couple of damning stats around that. We look at 2003, 32,000 people employed by Eskom. Today, 47,600. Now, what would that suggest? greater production, right, of whatever Eskom has.
No, you'd think growing company.
Exact same electricity production since 2003. Average salary, now if you take into account...
Just remember, we're a developing economy. We should have a greater demand for electricity, yes, so they should be producing more. Case. They're not.
They haven't produced more in 14 years. The average salary in 2003 was 220,000 rand per annum. Hmm. Obviously, consider inflation. But how
multiplied by almost four.
But how about that for a jump? 220,000 to 780,000 where we are today. And these people have the temerity to then bring the country to a standstill because they want more money,
right,
for producing, again, not more product.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, you don't understand. Your economy, you're adding and subtracting, and multiplication and division don't seem to make any sense. You're out of business. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
And going back to that whole, my sisters need to eat, what about the family who haven't budgeted for fast food four times this week? Okay, so now you're a family of four. You've got meat, whatever, in the freezer. Power goes off. Ruined food. Okay, so now you have to go and get takeaways.
Good point.
For a family of four, talk about eating. For a hardworking family of four who toil away in the private sector or with their own businesses, who need electricity to work, but these people want to have a cry about their cushy salaries not being increased at Eskom. Mm.
And by the way, you don't deserve a 15% increase for any good reason whatsoever that I can see in any business. When the economy is growing at zero, or as you're led to believe by the first quarter results, minus 2.2%, guess what? Your salary should be cut by 2.2%. You're lucky that the CEO says 0% increases.
Especially when you're a major contributor to that, because without electricity, the country goes backwards.
Well, Eskom, again, we can lay the blame fairly and squarely at Eskom's feet for so much of why we're being constantly reassessed by the ratings agencies for downgrades.
Exactly.
Eskom's fault. Why? Eskom management, certainly. But there must be people at Eskom who are also not doing their jobs. And for the ones who are doing their jobs, I'm sorry, but if you work for a company that's being mismanaged, you won't be just held responsible for pressing the buttons or for arriving for work on time or any of that stuff. Your management make it very difficult for all of you to not be swept with the same brush.
Mm. So we were spared load shedding yesterday, but now Eskom is saying that their power systems will take up to 10 days to recover from the effects of the industrial action once all of their staff return to work today. They thank us, the customers, for using electricity sparingly yesterday, which allowed it to keep the lights on during the evening peak time. But now, because of the imposed load shedding, they imposed load shedding on Friday evening and on Saturday, and the need for which was blamed on actions of intimidation and sabotage at some of its power stations amid industrial actions by unions. The unions were protesting, as of course we've discussed, the wage freeze by the electricity provider, and which Public Enterprises Minister Praveen Gordhan said on Friday night was no longer an option. So the estimated 10-day prognosis for full restoration is due to the interruptions of continuous processes at the power plant. So we have 10 days of load shedding to look forward to.
Okay, so now again, it goes back to the fact that this is the monopoly of power for one people, right? And there was sabotage here. There's some people who were disgruntled and said, you know what, guys, let's picket, let's stay away from work. They were actively intimidating people and sabotaging, as in causing damage to the system. That's treason, right? Can that not fall into that aspect too? Well, you're going out of your way to prevent a country from operating.
You're holding a gun to the public's head. Now, yeah. I'm sure there are lots of people who were a little bit inconvenienced by football matches being interrupted, which would be irritating enough. But we're talking about the macroeconomy. And like Ben says, there could be a family that's budgeted. They've bought food in advance. They've been very careful about spending. They've put that food in the freezer. And now it has to be thrown away because Eskom don't care.
Yeah,
that could be poor people, it could be rich people, it could be everyone in between. But it's you and me. And guess who has to foot the bill at the end of the day? Not only for that wasted food, or for the fact that you don't get... It's amazing, like, they don't lower the price of electricity when they can't provide it, like a public company would. A private sector company would. They keep increasing. The Eskom went to to NERSA how many times in the last couple of years to ask for increases? Every time they want us to pay more for a service we're getting less out of. Think about that for a second. That doesn't seem like progress.
So to take the next step, how does it get broken up and how do things get privatized in the sector?
Well, they won't be until government make it so. But government seem to be flirting with the idea that the state can run things better than anyone else, which patently they can't do. There is zero evidence to show that even when Pravin, who's a smart accountant at best and a socialist at worst, Pravin can't get these things up and running properly. He couldn't while he was Minister of Finance before. He seems as Public Services and Administration, Public Enterprises Minister, to be trying to get things right. But government can never run things better than the private sector. Why? Because they don't pay attention to the fundamentals.
Well, they're protecting so many useless people.
There we go. All right, enough about Eskom. There's a whole diatribe for you to dine out on today, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too. You know how to join in the conversation. 0797482090. On the Eskom story, because we've got a couple of messages here, I also have a friend who works there. I wish I could be more sure of the numbers, but I'm pretty sure that when she was on maternity leave, she got 9 months off fully paid.
Woo!
Not the usual 4 months everyone else gets. I mean, that might be speculative, but there we go. Spot on, Gareth. Very often in the private sector, an employer would just move to a competitor due to a company's performance, or a better offer not to stay when the company's bleeding money. That's from Gavin. Yeah, Gavin. I mean, if you're getting ripped off by Vodacom, you move to MTN. If you don't like MTN, you go to Cell C, and if you don't like them, you go to Telkom Mobile or any other combination of those. And now you can also go to Rain since they've just opened up. But that provides some stimulus to consumers. Consumers take an interest. You don't have those kinds of choices when you're looking at Eskom. Guys, Eskom wanted to up the tariffs, but they couldn't so easily. So they let the workers strike so that we could pay more to the workers and electricity prices would go up. Well, in a roundabout way, with a lot of leeway, I'll give it to you. That's more or less what's going on. Just a couple of others. We should all withhold our electricity payments in protest to the shit service that we get from Eskom. The workers are holding the country to ransom. But here's the problem. If you don't pay your electricity, guess what happens? You get cut off.
Yeah.
You get punished like that.
They're very good at that.
And you're the one who's paying the bills, by the way. They're not earning anything from these workers. They're paying for the workers. You expect too much from uneducated people, says somebody.
Too many much.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to just stop that there. Should I carry on reading? ANC knew what they were doing when they screwed up the education system. You end up with people who believe they're entitled to jobs and a salary without contributing. Maybe. I think too many much.
Too many
who knows, but you can always WhatsApp or Telegram or tweet or whatever else you'd like to do to join in the conversation. 0797482090. I had to feel sorry for old Sashi Naidu. She had a shit weekend.
Well,
I feel sorry for her, but maybe I don't, and maybe I do, and I don't know. I mean, it's just so complicated. So I don't know how this whole thing unfolded, but it turns out that Black Coffee, who's one of our proudest exports. This is a guy who you cannot say hasn't earned everything he has on his own. And he's gone ahead and he's done it despite everybody else, you know, in the music world not necessarily turning a profit. This guy is like the world's most in-demand DJ, and well done to him. Anyway, he performs once or twice in Israel and he's received untold shit for this. Sashi Naidu went, and Sashi, she's a model. Right? She's a model.
Yeah.
So she goes on and she's like, oh, I love Black Coffee, and he's allowed to perform in Israel if he wants to, which, by the way, is a totally legit opinion to hold. Well, the same crew that came after me when I said that Israel has the right to defend its borders not so long ago saw her as an easy target. You know, it's amazing to me these guys are not taking on Netanyahu or Donald Trump or the Israeli military because they'll get trounced. Instead, they go for Gareth Cliff and Sashi Naidu. Talk about the lowest hanging fruit. And then they might score a victory every now and then. I don't know whether they did against me. I certainly haven't changed my opinion on that. And I haven't apologized, and I won't. But Sashi did. Listen to this apology.
Guys, the apology I made today on Instagram was very sincere.
She's crying. There's snot rolling down her face. She's there, tears. Her makeup's all smudged. I kind of felt bad for her. I really did.
I felt bad in how she dealt with...
Guys,
the entire thing.
If you're a big pro-Palestinian, and we have lots of people who listen to us who are very anti-Israel, very pro-Palestine, and we have lots of listeners who go the other way, you're entitled to that opinion. But for you to imagine that Sashi Naidu is a fair target, I don't think Sashi Naidu has ever been to Palestine. I don't think she cares about Palestine. I don't think she cares about Israel that much. She cares about black coffee. And you're going to turn her into a victory for Palestine? Don't you see what you're doing? Ordinary people who aren't that interested in this story are either going to take her side or not take her side or not care. But it's not a big deal. And for average Palestinian women and children who you say are being held victim to Israel's evil plots and plans and their wicked military, well, dragging Sashi Naidu in isn't going to make the world of difference. Don't you see that? And making an enemy of people like her who aren't that interested in Palestine to start with makes them anti. Do you think anyone, after seeing Sashi with her snot and her tears, is going to get involved in the Palestinian discussion? Not a chance. What you're doing is you're saying to ordinary people who make up the vast majority of South Africa, ordinary people, by that I mean people who aren't that interested in Palestine or Israel, by making a mockery and forcing Sashi to prostrate herself before the world in such an unbecoming fashion, all you're doing is you're saying to every other South African, for God's sake, don't talk about this, which is precisely the opposite of what you want if you care about Palestine or Israel, right? Anyway, the same mob that came after me went after her, and she issued this miserable statement. Just listen to this. I mean, it's just so pathetic. You want to go and run over there and give her chicken soup.
Made today on Instagram was very sincere. I assure you of that. But I've already received 10 death threats today and a lot of backlash. I am sincerely sorry. And
she broke down. Girl. It was ugly. It just got really ugly.
Yeah.
So she put that up on Instagram, and it was just horrible.
People are just
Ever apologize to people on social media. They first of all, death threats. Sashi, welcome to the club. You can be proud of yourself now. You've received death threats.
Jeez.
It's just so awful, really.
Even Malula commented on this entire thing.
What did he say?
He said, "Oh, Sashi, she must stick to gallivanting, please."
That's rich coming from him.
There we go. Who's somewhere jet-setting.
Our minister.
In the world
Now. He's not a minister anymore.
No.
He's jet-setting. He's probably at the World Cup.
He is.
Yes, he is. Taking selfies in private planes.
Ben and Sia both sent me a clip over the weekend of, I'm not sure what this is. Is this from a reality TV show?
Geordie Shore.
What's the story here?
Oh, we're talking about this.
Well, it's just Geordie Shore. So you've got very sort of orange people with funny accents go about their lives how we do, but with maybe a little bit less finesse. So they've got relationship issues. They've got career, whatever, love, lust, heartache, misery.
So what's in this clip? What's this all about?
It's a couple talking about going to the next step in their relationship, which everyone gets that crossroad at some stage.
Here it is.
I love you.
I think now is the perfect time to tell her what the fortune teller told me in Byron. So you know when I went to Byron, I got like my star sign read where she pulled loads of these cards out like she was playing 21. On the card that she gave me, she said the relation's ready to move to the next step. The card had a moon on, and the moon was that far off from being a full moon. And I said, clicked, this is the next step.
Next step? Oh my God, is he about to propose?
I love these shows.
It's,
I mean,
so bad.
I know very smart people who watch these shows. I don't know why, but I can't. You've got the music loud in the background. Mm-hmm. You get these two sitting in a fake picnic scenario.
The accents.
And he's trying to explain to her. Let me just translate for those people who don't speak Geordie. He's trying to explain to her that he went to a fortune teller. This, by the way, is how he decides that he's going to either propose or take the relationship to the next level. What does he call it? Next step. And he bases all of this on a fortune teller who turned over a card where the moon was almost full. This is how people make the most important decisions in their lives.
Yeah, sure.
And we wonder why we have so many miserable people on Father's Day, because this dickhead's going to one day have a kid. Daddy, why do I exist? Oh, because I once went to a fortune teller, told me your mum, who I now am divorced from, wanted me to have You! This is how it happened, young son. Great. This is how this is how relationships happen. Are you ready for this? So let's listen to what the next step is. She's so excited. Her name is Chloe. She wears so much makeup you have to take it off with a cement trowel. Jesus.
To scrape it off.
You'd keep scraping and you'd never reach the skin.
Oh my god! Is he about to propose?
I want to put it in your ass. Because we haven't done that yet, and that is the next step for the cock to go in the ass.
Me. I thought he was about to propose. Not trying, stick it in my ass. Sam, it's not going in my ass.
Well, the card woman said you're ready for the next step.
I don't care what the
Yes! Yes! This is it. You wanted to look into people's lives. You wanted reality TV. This is where it's going.
Oh my goodness. This is as real.
Fortune teller told me next step, I want to put it in your ass. Yes! Gotta love
you
that.
You have to admire how tacky these British and American reality shows are.
Oh my god, I love that.
Well, guys, you did see the moon on the card.
I love that. I'm so proud of these two. I hope that they have years of happiness together.
How just a mess.
See how also, I mean, there is something universal in this. There is always in reality TV. Because what you're doing is you're boiling humanity down to its common denominators. And the common denominator here is also like a male-female difference. To a guy, taking the relationship to the next level means putting it in her ass. To a girl, it means proposal. You see how we miscommunicate?
Yeah, but I think in many cultures, putting in the ass is the next step. I'm pretty sure his father went through this, and his cousins, and his brother, and his uncle.
Oh, you can see it.
And I'm sure he consulted his friends, and they said, yeah.
Well, it's Geordie Shore. Of course he consulted his friends, and it would have been videotaped
all the best.
Live.
And I bet her friends were like, well, did you just say yes or no?
Oh, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Which brings us to Father's Day, because I really feel, and I'm not looking for a reason to be controversial here. Father's Day is obviously a very painful day for a lot of people in South Africa, because a lot of people in South Africa don't have fathers, or they don't have good fathers. But I don't want to go down that path. What I want to do is talk about a non-Father's Day. In other words, that we have a day in the year where non-parents are celebrated. People who've chosen not to fill the world with their children. I'd like a day where those people get presents from.
The same way they get like texts.
All right, so I'm talking about people who are in happy relationships and have decided that either of them don't want kids, which is a very hard decision for some people to come to. It's tough. You're fighting DNA. You're fighting societal norms. The normal thing in society to do is to get married and have children. Mm. That's what we're taught to believe from an early age. So to fight that urge, to break that chain, is a very brave thing. Second of all, and you might be a gay couple who decide not to do this. You might be a couple who feel that the world isn't a great place. But I would like a day, not because I'm one of these people, but because there are so many heroes and heroines out there who are never celebrated. You hear such a fuss made of Mother's Day and Father's Day. How about Non-Parents Day? How about a day where people get presents, they get treated like royalty by the rest of society for not filling the earth with their progeny, for not driving a people-carrying vehicle into the extra family space parking at the shopping mall and taking up the whole aisle in the store, and for not having the screaming child in the trolley,
yes,
and for not that smell of nappies that are full. Mm. And all of that stuff that makes life really great for the rest of us. How about a day for those people? I understand Father's Day. I mean, I've got family who are fathers. My mm-hmm. father is a father. My brother is a father. I had a great time with my family over the weekend.
Do you see any...
But I would love us to acknowledge the real stars, the real heroes. The ones who say, I'm not going to just... For no good reason. I'm not going to just impregnate someone and have a child. Non-Father's Day.
Do you envision any particular festivities on the day?
No.
No.
No, you don't want church. All I'm saying is, in your own quiet way, be celebrated for making the sacrifice of not having children.
Okay.
Because if you're in a marriage, you get certain tax breaks. You get certain privileges. You're expected to... I mean, I don't get paternity leave. And a lot of women who don't have children don't get maternity leave. We just carry on working, keeping the economy going while you pump out children.
Well, I don't know about you, but I celebrate my non-parent day every single day.
Right.
When I get to come home and put my feet up and I have no responsibility. That's how I celebrate. I don't need another extra day. I'm fine.
Yeah, it's not about getting extra days and all that kind of stuff, but there should be some sort of like tangible, like a tax break or something.
I reckon if for every child you have, you should pay an extra 2% in tax, really. I mean, I think it's only fair because I'm subsidizing other people's children, whether I like it or not. So are you, Sia, so are you, Ben. So is every other non-parent in the world. And I'm not trying to upset parents. I think you do a great job.
Look, it's interesting. I think we have an email from a listener who spoke about tax and really putting all of this into
this is woman of color. Woman of color is talking about Holland and how it works.
She's
there.
Smart, so yeah, read away.
Right, here's woman of color who sent me an email. I'm thinking that you need to be educated about the Netherlands. A good decision if you want to come here, but let me give you the grown-up version of what happens in the Kingdom of the Netherlands. You'd first have to find a job. Fortunately, there are lots of those, part-time or full-time. And you could become a prostitute because it's legal and prostitutes do pay income tax. There's no shame in being a prostitute. They have offices that they rent or own inside a dedicated part of town, the red light district. My ex-boyfriend showed me where his grandmother's office was many years ago. She sold it to a younger colleague when she retired. I've seen many a time partners give their prostitute partner a kiss on dropping them off at work to wish them a good day, just like any other. Maybe you're a skilled worker, though, like a dentist or an IT expert, both highly sought after. There's a chronic shortage of those in the Netherlands. Decent high-earning jobs, right? Well, be prepared to part with 52% of your decent earnings in income tax, says woman of color. Being a teacher, like in the rest of the world, you'll earn less than you deserve unless you teach at a private school. Primary, secondary, and high school education is free in the Netherlands. It's paid for by high earners, even if they themselves have no brats. Around 90% of schools are public and the education's excellent. The Dutch princesses all attend public schools. No. Private schools are meant for expats, people whose employers are footing the bill as an incentive for them to work in the Netherlands temporarily. The British, the Japanese, the Americans. Private school teachers do not have a reason to strike. Public school teachers recently started striking. One strike lasted a whole 30 minutes. Emails were sent to parents. School would start 30 minutes later than usual because the teachers would go and demonstrate outside Parliament. Apologies for the inconvenience. Isn't that civilized?
I can't even picture that in South Africa.
Become an employer if you come to the Netherlands. Some of us were stupid enough to become one of those. Why do you ask? Well, when the employee is sick, they're not required by law to prove that they're sick. In fact, only in the cases of chronic illness, more than 6 weeks, does the employer have to prove that the employee is unable to work. We don't get sick notes for occasional ailments, no matter what the duration. The employer must continue to pay 70% of the debilitated employee's wages for up to 2 years. Yes, you heard that right. You will have to hire another employee to do the job and to continue to pay the debilitated one for another 2 years. Join us again next week, says woman of color, when I give you more reasons to move to the Netherlands. So it's not all a picnic. Thank you, woman of color. We love your emails. Andrew sent this one to me. Hey, Gareth, could you interview a tax specialist or someone from SARS to talk about the possibility of a tax revolt? Well, this is interesting, so I'll explain to you what Andrew means. We need more info on how we could do it, what the best way is to undo the damage if things change for the better. From what I understand, my tax pays for A, roads, except I'm paying twice when I use toll roads. Correct. B, schooling, except I'm paying twice because my kids go to private school. Correct. C, safety, except I'm paying twice because I'm armed response because the police can't cope. Correct. D, hospitals and clinics, except I'm paying twice because I have medical aid and I pay for my own doctor's visits. Correct. E, untold bureaucrats who destroy value instead of creating it. Correct. Especially if you heard the ESCOM discussion earlier. F, Parliament. Goodness knows what they do there. And the endless ego-boosting blue light brigades. Correct. So there we go, Andrew. You've pretty much summarized it. We didn't need a SARS official.
Jeez.
I'd be happy to pay all the government services myself if and when I need them. The plus side is now I have almost doubled my monthly salary to spend. I will buy a 4x4 to drive over the potholes on the roads. Currently, I employ a part-time domestic. If my salary was doubled, I'd take her on full-time. In all likelihood, I would employ a full-time gardener and au pair too. Plow plenty more money into the economy, which would create jobs, because jobs are better than grants. I'll then celebrate with a drink that would have cost me half the price. You see, because if you take tax out of all those things, you have double the money. I would appreciate if we could have a serious conversation about this, because enough is enough. It's time to mobilize civil society. 5 million, and this is the most important thing, 5 million taxpayers cannot prop up 17 million grant recipients. You don't even, we're terrible mathematicians on this show. Maybe Ben's a little better than Sia and I.
Not really.
But this is just unbelievable. 5 million taxpayers are propping up 17 million grant recipients. Just ponder that for the rest of this week while you're working hard. The government can keep the VAT to fund a token president to shake hands with dignitaries and cut ribbons. But what else do we need? Says Andrew. So there we go. Some interesting feedback from our very smart listeners. I always explain to people how clever our listeners are here compared to what I was dealing with in radio. There are women who are in a perpetual state of maternity on leave in the UK. They pop one out and then go on leave, and within that time they get pregnant again. That's from a UK number that's just emailed us. The Dutch don't have so many fat, dumb politicians. Sia, don't agree with everything Gareth says. I don't know if he was. Hey, nutbags. It's 7:35 and the first podcast isn't available yet. Are you still on a long weekend? You guys are usually on point, or does the cold limit your superpowers? All right. We're working on it. Calm down. You see, we also have more demanding listeners here than we've ever had before. Good for you. Let's go to Rich Mulholland. He's on the line. It's reality check time. It's a Monday morning. That's what we do. Is he on Skype or on the phone? Skype. Hey, Rich. How are you, sir?
Sup, nutbags.
Oh. You sound terrific this morning. What's news?
Not too much. Been a nice, chilled weekend. Good times.
Did you watch a lot of football?
I absolutely did not.
Oh.
I could think of, it's like punishment for shoplifting for me.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's like ice hockey played in slow motion by people who have glorified rolling around on the floor holding their legs. So,
all right, okay. I'll just stop that line of questioning.
But what
right
about
there.
The hairstyles and their tattoos, Rich?
I think they're gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. I think they're beautiful. I mean, I love watching them walk down the street. I just don't enjoy the sport.
All right.
I just don't get the sport, if I say it. It's just not my thing.
All right.
They got to kick into the net.
So what's on your mind today, Rich?
Well, so it's about a video put on the internet. Now, I realize getting upset about videos people put on the internet is a bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But a family friend recently put a video online, and it's called Sex and Consent in Movies. And it talks about the way how we are creating the wrong environment for how women will be treated based on how we display sex and things in movies, and how it's making it basically worse for women, and how Hollywood is glorifying the mistreating of women and how it needs to end.
Mm-hmm.
And
less like Me Too, but now in a video form so that people who didn't know about Me Too can find out about it.
For sure, with specifically targeting Hollywood. And I guess this is the bit that I want to chat about.
Mm-hmm.
And the family friend said, and the subject line was, "A subject I feel very strongly about. Hollywood is the reason. There are a lot of fucked up people out there thinking all of this is okay. So Hollywood is the reason."
Right.
And the video starts and it shows clips from things like Revenge of the Nerds and Porky's and Grease. And I'm thinking, hold on a second. We're going back 20 years, 30, 40 years even in some cases to show these examples. We're cherry-picking examples like that scene in Greece, you know, tell me more, did she put up a fight? And this is men glorify. Oh, terrible. Now, I think what we need to just stop and realize one thing before we cast blame on Hollywood, that without a doubt, And I understand that where I'm not saying that it's perfect. I'm not saying it's even good. Mm-hmm. But without a doubt, it's actually the best time to be alive for people. I remember actually you did a talk on this a while ago. But we live in the best time to be alive.
Yeah.
For women as well, rape statistics are going down.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the way women are being treated across the board is better. And I actually think that instead of blaming Hollywood for this, we probably need to actually realize that they have a positive role to play. Because, in fact, people are quite rational. So if they do see behavior that they don't like in a movie or in a film, maybe they decide that that's the catalyst for changing things.
Mm.
I think that we need to understand that we have come so far, but we're still trying to blame everybody for everything that's happening going forward. And I think it has to stop. I mean, I don't know if you remember when we were kids, those terrible American sitcoms that at the end of every single episode of Three's Company or Full House, there was a 5-minute moral lesson about being
that.
A better person. Yeah.
I used to stop watching at that point and I'd go to the kitchen
when the soft piano would come on.
Yeah, and you'd have your favorite character suddenly come out of character and like teach you a life lesson. I hate that stuff.
It was like Uncle Joey from Full House. He would always be that guy, and he'd do that smiling thing. Well, DJ, you know, only by loving your sisters. But luckily, thank goodness, they did give you that soft piano. That was the cue. They were letting you know, guys, if you want to make a cup of tea, leave the kids here so they can be morally better, and
off
you go.
This is the part of the show where we fill in for your shitty parents who didn't teach you this stuff.
Which was exactly the point I wanted to bring in. That's where we come in as parents. That's our job. This is simply a further case of role model laziness.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we can't cleanse the world from our children, right? We can't. I mean, if you don't want to show an episode of the she got upset with Revenge of the Nerds because the nerdy guy in revenge to the hot cheerleader, they tricked her into thinking that he was a jock or something. And now they're all upset about this because this is promoting this terrible rape culture in women. But actually, it's our job as parents to turn around and say, that shit's not okay. Right? We can't not show people things.
Right.
We actually, if we want our kids to grow up better, we have to show them good and bad. And then our job as people sitting next to them say, hey, kids, you understand that this is not okay, right? Dad, of course I understand it's not okay. But we have to have those conversations. But we're continuing to separate ourselves and this role model laziness to expect that it's everybody else's job to bring our kids up right.
Yep.
And that's bullshit, right? It's nobody else's job, actually. Not even your school teachers. It's your school teacher's job to teach your children English, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's your job to make sure your kids are brought up okay. So if you see something, if you're sitting watching a movie and it's an inappropriate behavior with your kids, you've got two choices. You can quickly turn it off, never show it to them so that they don't have a perspective on it. Or you can sit down, you can watch it, and that night at dinner, you can turn around and say, hey guys, I want to talk a little bit about what we just saw in this film. What do you guys think about that? And even if it wasn't, say, but Dad, it was a comedy, it was just a bit of a comic relief. Say, cool, as long as you understand that. As long as you understand that for the sake of this, it was one thing, but on the flip side, you need to know that it's not right behavior. That's our job. And I guess I know you just talk about the kind of anti Parents Day week, but I think if you're going to be celebrating Father's Day and fathers, we actually need to start acting like it and take some responsibility for the shag we had.
And let's also just be very clear about something, is that people generally need to take more responsibility for themselves. All I hear on the internet from a certain quarter of people is that everything around them is the fault of everybody else. Like, I'm terribly sorry, but, you know, you're a decision-making organism. You're already better off than all the other creatures that are alive on the planet.
Exactly.
No matter how miserable you think your circumstances are, maybe your parents didn't love you, maybe you were made by mistake, and maybe you did grow up without any resources. Guess what? You still have the ability to craft your own future, which is more than we could say for every other creature in the kingdom Animalia. So either you get off your victim mentality right now and start making it happen, or you stop complaining, because I'm not interested in listening anymore.
I could not agree more. I 100% think that we have the best opportunities, the best chances, and all we have to do is take some degree of control. And all of that control, the number one way that control starts is when you stop blaming other people. That's it.
Right. So
if you are still finding yourself blaming other people, you have not yet decided to take control of your life. Yeah, you are saying that I'm happy to live in the system, not outside of it.
Thank you very much, Rich Mulholland. Always good to check in with you on the reality check. Yeah, have a good week.
You too, dude.
All right, there we go. Some wisdom. Rich Mulholland can be found on Twitter, on Facebook, and everywhere else where everybody is. He's also a terrific speaker, and if you've ever seen him, you'll know what I'm talking about. In person, he's even more impressive than he is here. And that's saying something. It is 8 minutes to go until eight. Let's wrap it up with the un-news for this morning. Got a couple of other things to squeeze in before the end of the day. Sia wants to quickly tell us about what actually happened at the Sunday Times Generation Next Awards, because he was at the awards ceremony, as well as the daytime where he hosted a panel I was on, where we talked about digital disruption. But did I leave anything out when I talked about the day? And then you could tell us about the night.
Well, the day was made up. That's the first part of the entire event, is the conference. And so there were different panels. As you had said, we hosted a panel and they were discussing different topics within the youth and the marketing space. Aria Kalman hosted one of the panels. The HDI youth team have a young group of teenagers who also offers their advice. They're called the JBOD, the Junior Board of Directors. Mm-hmm. So it's all of these different conversations. And if you're interested in marketing, and particularly youth marketing within the South African space, noticing African and world trends, then you definitely should read up more on some of the conversations that happened on the day. But as well, they have a massive expo. Now, that's when all of the biggest brands who are appealing to the youth get to display what they're all about. And the youth get to interact. They walk around the room at the Sandton Convention Center, seeing what all of these brands are doing. And then in the afternoon, the who's who and the biggest brands and the celebrities all come around for the award ceremony. And that's when DJ Black Coffee won, Uzalo won as one of the biggest shows in the country, etc., etc.
And they go through all the brands that are having an impact in that age group, and you know, who's kind of ranked as the most noticeable, most well-marketed, most effective brands. It's terrific.
Yeah. So to make everything easier for you, we have a page on cliffcentral.com with the whole rundown of Generation Next for 2018. There are pictures, mm-hmm. there's the audio available from the conversation Gareth and I had in our panel discussion. You'll be able to read up more on the Sunday Times Generation Next Awards and Conference. So it's all available right now at cliffcentral.com/Sunday-Times-Generation-Next. There we go.
There we go. Go
or
and check it out.
It's on the homepage of
Yeah, just go to cliffcentral.com, scroll down a little bit, you'll find it right there.
Nice and simple.
Yeah, we don't expect you to remember some complicated URL. So there we are. We're proud to support and be associated with this event that connects every brand, marketing, media, and advertising professional who is serious about hacking into the younger generation and what makes them tick. That's what everybody's asking, and we try to help to answer it. Go along to cliffcentral.com for more information. Coming up in a little while, Chris Bishop, who is the Forbes Africa editor. We spoke to him a little while ago about what the major trends were. You can take a listen to that conversation, compare it with what has actually happened, and see how spot on Chris actually was. We talked about South Africa's economy. We looked at other African countries. We talked about possible solutions into the ways we could grow our economy, and what the take was of Chris on a number of other interesting stories, including DJ Boo's fake Forbes cover, which you remember at that time was a big story. So all of that can be found in the interview next on cliffcentral.com. From Generation Next to Next. All right, thank you for joining us this morning. Here is the un-news. Eskom say things will be back to normal in about 10 days' time. They're going to steal some more tax money, make sure all the bloated and overpaid staff are made happy, and then essentially work on a new tariff hike so that they don't have the same situation next year. Great job, Eskom. Speaking of Eskom, Brian Molefe could well face criminal charges in the near future. The DA are gunning for him with a variety of charges, from his illustrious career of accepting bloated salaries for doing very little. He seems defiant, though, telling the media he has loads of tears stacked up and will release them if and when needed. Bikile Mbalula has struggled to create any ins for himself in the current Springbok series, so he went to Russia the last couple of days. FIFA still believe him when he says he's South Africa's sports minister, so they gave him tickets and photo opportunities with people in and around the stadium. Isn't that nice? Shame someone cares. All right, we will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Keep it on cliffcentral.com for all the good stuff. And thanks for joining us. Lots of surprises on the way this week. I'm not going to give away too much now. Stick around and you'll find out everything you need to know.
This is cliffcentral.com.